Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 576. Science Faction, the genes of the damned and the faces of the beautiful.
All right, so finally we're becoming a fucking heavy metal podcast. Bobby, god damn it, I love it. Are we going to need to do our own mouth guitar effects, or are you going to have that on post?
No, actually, we are just going to become the animated film Heavy Metal, and I am going to get much bustier.
Oh, thank god, because I'm getting honest. I don't like looking at Zoom that much, but some jugs would fix that, I feel. Some jugs and some cleavage.
Yes. I thought that since I first started reading like early 1950s teenager comic books, and I was like, finally, a comic book just about jugs, but it turned out to be about Jughead.
It's okay, though, because that dude crushed puss, let me tell you, at Riverdale. I don't remember a comic with the guy who had tits for heads. Bobby, is this true? By the way, jugs, that's a word that's kind of on the way out. And I always loved that word for breasts growing up.
Yes.
Because it was so beautifully crass and to the point. Like, it was like, yeah. If you had to figure out a word for breasts that your mother would hate,
yes,
jugs was the way to go.
And boy, did your mom had a set of jugs on her.
She hated it when I complimented her jugs. She said it made her feel weird. I don't get it. I didn't feel weird. I was aroused.
And speaking of feeling weird, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Why would she show off her breasts in that Quaker dress if she didn't want me complimenting her jugs?
She, like, made me eat out of them and stuff, too.
Yeah, god. I mean, one time she showed some ankle, and I was like, Mom, I'm a flesh and blood man of 14.
Oh, dear. And if you are a flesh and blood man of more than 14 and would like to hear more weekly Science Faction episodes, go ahead and check out our Patreon. Look up Robert Timothy and you can find our weekly I Call BS episodes. You can get twice the amount of science, twice the amount of Science Faction, twice the amount of Bobby and Damian every single week by joining at even the lowest level. So go ahead and check that out. We've been seeing a bunch of people influx in from a cult podcast. Welcome. We're happy to have you, and thank you for just signing up for Patreon as well.
And if you're looking for, and if you, after you listen to this episode, and you're looking for another podcast to fill your work or drive schedule, and you're also a type of nerd who loves tabletop gaming, I have a podcast called Awful Neutral. It is a live play Dungeons and Dragons podcast. We have a hilarious cast consisting of some of me and Bobby's funniest friends. If you like the humor of this show, you will fucking love the humor of that show. It's less about learning things, but it's equally about dick jokes.
Yes, don't compare the two, as the second one is much, much worse. And I will say, it is a very well-chosen name, because it emphasizes exactly how I felt about both of its starting and soon its eventual demise.
Awful Neutral is infinitely funnier than this podcast, because unlike this podcast, we don't have archaeology articles dragging down the level of interesting and comedy on Awful Neutral.
First of all, most of Louis C.K.'s best sets start off with archaeology articles and then move into comedy.
as he's masturbating in front of, as he's making a younger female comedian watch. Did I ever tell you guys about Beringia?
Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
They say that's what a lot of experienced archaeologists will do. Male archaeologists, in order to display their power, they'll sometimes hit on newer female archaeologists and masturbate in front of them while explaining new world facts.
Yeah, but you can kind of hide it in ethnography studies. You're like, well, this is what the Yamamara do, and then, you know, pull it off.
You know, I don't prefer the Socratic teaching method.
Well, that would be if you were asking questions while you were jerking off.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm clearly not using.
Well, technically, that is the Socratic CK teaching method.
I am a Sedai learner, a visual learner.
All I was doing was jerking off and asking questions. You can't come at me like I'm the problem.
Bobby, you never had the honor of having a football coach for a history teacher.
I did. I didn't have him as the football coach, but I had him for the history teacher part.
Oh yeah, that's right. You and I did have the same football coach for history. He just taught AP in yours. Yes. In which case, he never really had to bring out the football coach side of him.
No.
But I loved it. He could never work today. I mean, he probably shouldn't have even worked then. But
so true.
I like how you would use like industry terms from his profession. On the dumb kids, you're a Sedai learner, you're a visual. And he's saying this with like veins popping out of his neck and sweat pouring out of his forehead. This 4'10" bowling ball of a man shouting at a kid who refuses to do homework. Damien, you're a Sedai learner, you're a visual learner, you're a rock, you're worth nothing. Look at her, she's a diamond, she's worth something. We might as well put the orange vest on you and have you podcast. Because that's all you're good for. And he was right.
How did he predict podcasting back in 01?
Dude's a fucking oracle, man. Like, maybe, no wonder our team had such an unstoppable defense. He just knew what people were going to call.
By the way, I was thinking about that. Is there a less appropriate time to ask a question than when you're jerking off? Because I feel like asking a question and jerking off are two things that shouldn't go together.
What if the question is, can you stick a finger in me? Quick.
Yeah, but even then, it's like you should have established that before the jerking off period.
Bobby, I hate to break it to you. Sometimes you got to call an audible. Bobby, that's the first thing we learned as a football coach for a history teacher.
I think the only question that it's appropriate to bring up for the first time while jerking off is it okay for me to be jerking off right now?
Oh, you know, it could be one of those things. I'm sorry I forgot to ask. This is rude. As you just hear that in the background. Is this cool, Mom?
Oh, dear. On to article number one. The genes of the damned in the genetics of a Southeast Asian human dead end.
The genes of the damned. This sounds like an ancient curse set of Levi's that was discovered on a dig.
Your ass will always look fat no matter what kind of shape you're in. I mean, I guess I could just stop wearing these jeans, but...
Oh, Damien, you're wearing those jeans again. What do you mean? I took them off and threw them away this morning. I'm wearing shorts. I look down. Oh, my God, my jeans. And my ass looks huge.
So what is this story? Basically, it's the genetic data from a 2015 discovery of a 7,200-year-old burial in Indonesia, which is a place that doesn't usually preserve DNA very well, which is why it's so surprising that this article popped up. Now, the discovery of the actual body, the inhumation, the burial, was in 2015, but the work has been done to try and pull out DNA from it. We know tropical areas don't usually preserve DNA very well, which is why we don't have a lot from Southeast Asia, but... this particular one did, in part from something we have talked about before. It's another one of those things where I said, remember this article, you're going to hear about it a lot, it's going to change the way we do things. It was a few years ago, we covered an article that found out that the concentration of DNA in the incus malleus stapes, the three bones of the inner ear of human beings, is like many, many times, maybe tenfold the DNA concentration in other places. And I was like, just wait, watch this. We are going to use this to find DNA in, you know, skeletons and things that otherwise have very hard DNA to find. This particular discovery in 2015 was noted for being so complete. It was a complete inhumation, which meant the incus malleus and stapes were bouncing around there inside of the skull. And so they were able to get those out and they were able to get DNA out of it. So they found some pretty interesting stuff. It coincides with a lot of the stuff we do know, supports a lot of that stuff, and tweaks some of the stuff, but more importantly, it's just really, really interesting. So, to start out with, we've covered how Homo sapien made their way out of Africa. We think they actually made a couple of spurts and starts 100-some-odd thousand years ago that didn't end well, and none of those lineages survived. They were all wiped out. And then somewhere around 70-some-odd thousand years ago, one lineage left Africa, kind of hugged South Asia, went through island Southeast Asia, and made its way onto Australia and New Guinea, where eventually those two Australians and New Guineas, Aboriginal Australians and New Guinea Highlanders, they themselves separated apart from one another. And then that group continued to live in South Asia until subsequent groups of Homo sapien that left Africa basically completely replaced them and wiped them out. So that's why people who live in South Asia and Southeast Asia don't look to us to be, you know, super dark-skinned people that look like those in New Guinea, you know, or Australia. They look very, very different. So this individual is actually one of the peoples who is a descendant of that exodus from Africa, that early 70,000-year-old exodus from Africa that then became Aboriginal Australians and New Guinea Highlanders. Well, she was part of the lineage that stayed in mainland Southeast Asia, or in this case, in Indonesia, which at the time was probably a peninsula off mainland Southeast Asia. She stayed there. Her group stayed there and was eventually completely wiped out. We can't find her genetics in any living people in that area or anywhere else. And so it looks like she was her kind was completely obliterated off the face of the earth, a genetic dead end. But she shares this really ancient DNA with these people like the Aboriginal Australians and New Guinea Highlanders who made their way out of Africa 70 some odd thousand years ago. Really, really, really cool. And there's a couple of interesting little quirks to this. Number one is we see that she actually shows a recent and quite prominent admixture from the Denisovans, the Denny Bears, which reinforces the idea that in this area, island Southeast Asia, was where at least one of those admixtures happened. Based on some differential DNA we have from other ancient skeletons closer to mainland Southeast Asia, we can tell that kind of when this happened, when that admixture happened, and that it was closer to this individual's time, this woman, who, by the way, is about 18 years old when she died, this woman's time.
Senior.
In her time, she was considered middle-aged, let's just say.
Now, we've talked about this before, and you've said it wasn't so much that, like, there were still people who lived to 60 and everything. It's just that a lot of people got picked off in the middle.
No, a lot of people got picked off at 0 to 5. And so, like, if you live to 8 or 9 years old, on average, you would live to be like 63 or 64 in the Paleolithic. But in general, the average lifespan was 35 because so many babies and young kids died.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So she was a survivor. She was a hardy gal, hardy 18.
Yeah, and unfortunately, again, you know, she belongs to a entire giant group of people who were basically completely wiped off the face of the earth and have
because
no living descendants.
Because those cursed Levites hunted them down. You said so. I mean, Jed, Bobby, this is a horror story, if anything.
We could find their big asses anywhere.
Do people in their culture not like big asses? Because I promise you, if some genes that made an ass look big would get you laid in a lot of places here,
yeah, absolutely.
Unless you took off the genes and then your ass shrunk and you're like, okay, what the fuck? Can we just cut a hole in the genes?
Super sad that, you know, she didn't, her lineage completely died out, but very, very interesting that we found this person. This coincides, by the way, the time coincides with what we call the Tolian culture, which was known archaeologically, but obviously not genetically. And it kind of shows us how different Southeast Asia was only a short amount of time ago. Keep in mind, this woman and her descendants probably lived in or near that area for 60,000 years or 50,000 years or something like that. And then were only replaced by groups that look more like Han Chinese, you know, maybe 5,000 years ago or something like that. Think about that. Like, the people we think of as Asian have only really been Asian for like 1/10 the time that people have been there.
So Russians? So they look like Russians?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Pakistanis? You know what you're talking about?
Those Russians from Indonesia.
Hello, it is me, classical Asian man here. Oh no, I cannot eat with fork. I use chopstick. Be careful. Russians are masters at Kung Fu. I'm sorry, that's stereotype. We very sorry for Asian stereotype.
Very, very interesting. As we get more and more of these skeletons, especially post the discovery of this thing with the ear bones, as we start to fill in the genetic holes and kind of paper the earth with an ancient genetic legacy of who was where, what time, when, and what the genetics show us, how those people got there, et cetera, et cetera. All of that stuff will essentially just paint a picture of history in a really detailed and fairly accurate fashion that we will understand kind of how we got to where we are in this world
much more in 10 to 15 years than we do now. In fact, we understand it much more now than we did 10 or 20 years ago in terms of where human beings came from, how they got to where they are, the starts and stops and dead ends and the weird mixtures that produce certain people that for whatever reason went on to dominate the earth and all that stuff. Basically, the history of our species and our culture and our existence lies in the earth, in the bones of our ancestors that are around, just waiting for us to discover and crack open and figure out. So it's really, really neat whenever we put one of these big pieces in. And keep in mind, this might just be, you know, a kind of a flashy piece to put in. Oh, you know, one of the groups that came
showboat,
around 70,000.
One of those showboating pieces. God damn it.
Showboating genetic pieces of evidence where you're like, hey, oh, part of the group that came out of Africa 70,000 years ago, part of a group that was completely wiped off South Asia, the face of South Asia, part of a group that was near the admixture with Denny Bears, like all these cool little things. But really, the underlying importance of this is adding a previously completely unknown genetic lineage to our database that will allow us to then compare, you know, other ones we find in Southeast Asia and South Asia and slowly piece together all the shit that happened in prehistory before anyone was there to record it, because it is written in the DNA.
I'm sorry, Bobby. I'm going to take a step back to be racist against Asians again for a second.
Okay.
It's an old joke. I'm sure we've heard it before, but I haven't heard it since the playground, but I'm sure you've heard it. Some of our fans. I am Russian. We play joke. We put pee-pee in your... No, we put radioactive isotope in your vodka while you are in protective custody in another nation.
Very, very interesting stuff. And like I said, every one of these we add to our genetic database will kind of improve our version of what has happened before us. And the conglomeration of them together will tell us the story of humankind. Always super cool to see ancient DNA at work. On to article number two. How important is attractiveness at work?
Well, I mean, this podcast, while not a paying job, certainly I pay in stress.
Yes.
I pay in insults.
Yes.
And I pay in being disadvantaged in a workplace culture.
And I pay in you constantly losing and I call BS.
But that's, you're a millionaire in that. Like, that's...
that's like, true.
You found a way to leverage this into some sort of like, it's like this, you found a way for my losses and I call BS to equate to your happiness. In fact, so much so that you have to engineer, you have to put your thumb on the scales just to get your rocks off, mister.
First of all, that is absolutely untrue, and you know it. I've never
Stop lying to the audience.
I've never had to make you lose a game that you continually lose on your own. If you guys are curious about that, go ahead and join our Patreon. Check out I Call BS.
He is two steps away from saying, like, sad. A lot of people say how my games are the fairest. People are saying how I Call BS is the fairest game out there.
So, like, the numbers are actually pretty consistent, and they show that attractive people have huge advantages at work. Not just at work, by the way, in almost everything we do. As a matter of fact, here's a side note, and this is not covered in the article we're going to talk about. It is one of, like, the things we don't account for in terms of, like, privilege and how easy a person has it. Because being an attractive person is, like, such a insane advantage that does not show on paper. You can't be like, oh, a rich white dude born with a trust fund. All right, that shows on paper. I don't need to see that guy to know he has privilege. But you can find somebody who's like poor, grew up in an urban environment. But if they're attractive, and I hate to get too sexist on this, but especially if they're an attractive female, like, they're going to be okay. Like, they have options that they're going to be all right. And the numbers, like, seem to back that up. Like, when you look at the discrepancy, some studies will show that the attractiveness discrepancy and privilege is much bigger than any racial or gender or even economic privilege that are enjoyed by most other people.
The only way I could think for somebody to want to be less attractive, if they're attractive, but they're not like that Hollywood type attractive, and they're trying to be an actor, because there is a point where, like, you're just, hey, sorry, man, or sorry, actor, you're just not attractive enough to get the roles. At that point, you kind of got to go ugly or weird looking to get those very specific roles. Like, The Hills Have Eyes is coming out with a sequel. Yes. I can nail apart if my eyes were further apart.
We're doing the Steve Buscemi doc, and, well, we need somebody to play Steve.
We're doing a remake of Idiocracy, and we want the people to physically appear as intelligent as they are.
We try to stand in for him, but what we ended up doing is putting in a ligature around the neck of a frog just to try and get that Buscemi look, but no.
It was taking too long to teach the frog elocution, so...
You know, talk shit if you want about that frog on 9/11. He joined his old firefighting crew and started helping people.
I loved that frog as Mr. Pink. Like, he wouldn't pay. He wouldn't tip. Not a tipper.
Oh, dear.
Frogs in a lot of Adam Sandler movies, though.
So we've known for a long time that attractiveness, especially conventional attractiveness, has huge privileges and huge benefits. But one study wanted to look at not only, like, was there a benefit, but could that benefit kind of be hacked in a way? And so the conclusion they came to is, yes, attractiveness is important. But in this particular study, and I have some issues with the study itself, but it is an interesting idea, it's not just the attractiveness that matters. It's the patterns of action that attractive people have because they are attractive.
So what you're saying is somebody who of moderate attractiveness, but somebody who puts out or who has sex like an attractive person, who inspires the desire of an attraction person, somebody who seduces their coworkers, can close that gap. That's what you're saying?
Kind of. So what they looked at two different studies that evaluated like an elevator pitch, because it's a really easy way to give somebody like a 30-second thing and then do a quick evaluation. It looked at like 300 different elevator pitches, so 300 different people. And it's a total mock job setup. It's not real at all. So they set it apart into two different ones. The first one, those making the decisions as to like who they would hire, which elevator pitch they would take, they rated good-looking people as more hireable. And their reasoning, because it was one of those situations where they had to do reasoning for their decision, which is what they care about, was that they had more effective nonverbal presence. So the researchers looked at that and went, basically, how do these attractive people act? What can we do to the unattractive people to get them to mimic those actions? So in the second one, they did the same thing, the same elevator pitch, but this time they had them strike a quote-unquote power pose. Now, those of you guys who are familiar with that research will know that a lot of the quote-unquote power pose...
Yes, they pulled their dick out. I know what a power pose is. You put your hands on your hips like you're doing a superhero pose, but your dick's just... You're just hanging dong.
And if you ask a question while you're doing it, it's the Socratic CK method of power posing.
Hold on. You asked a question. Let me get hard. I just was kind of at this weird, impressive state. I didn't want to come off as too aggressive in this elevator pitch. By the way, when I'm pitching a stuck porn, that's basically what I'm going to pitch.
Now, those of you guys who remember the power pose, quote unquote, research will know that it is mostly kind of debunked and stuff. But there is something to standing.
Yeah, people are just concerned why you have your dick out. It does not project power. In fact, it's more likely to get you fired than promoted, truth be told.
Surprising fact.
Which I'm actually going to be taking a hiatus from the podcast for a little bit, guys. Some things happened. I was trying to negotiate for a raise, and things didn't work out the way an internet video told me they would. So I just want to go ahead and say it's been a fun couple of years from you guys. Maybe I'll be back. Maybe I won't. Depends if I can trap Bobby in an elevator again.
Have them stand with their feet shoulder width apart, with their hands on their hips, their chest out, and their chin up during the pitch. And when they did this, the less attractive people were able to match the level of nonverbal presence that their more attractive counterparts displayed naturally. You can look up all of that verbatim in the Live Science article this week on the subject. Now, aside from the power pose stuff being bullshit in terms of power pose itself, they are taking assertive stance and assertive postures, more confident ones. And to that extent, I can see what's going on. You know, if somebody is raised as being attractive their whole life, they have been the hottest person in their class, every class they've ever been in, then they're naturally going to have a confidence exude from them. And trust me, you've probably met these people before, because I know I have, because it throws me...
You podcast with them every week.
Well, no. Maybe, because listen to this part. So it always throws me off when you meet like a non-attractive person who has attractive person energy, and you're like, what is it about you? I don't find you attractive, but I can tell you think you are, and this bothers me now. And so now I have to figure out what's going on.
Now, when you say that, are you referring to a male or female
usually female. And when you trace it back, you can almost always figure out that they, A, were attractive at some point, or B, had way too loving parents. Like the type of parents that tell you you're attractive when you're actually not. So you grew up with the false confidence.
What, just because, and especially when you grew up, I felt like there were a lot of, and it wasn't everybody, but there certainly were those groups of attractive girls where the only reason you were in that group wasn't because you shared a commonality. It was because you guys were all the attractive girls at the middle school, the high school, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not a generalization about girls. I'm just saying at every high school, there's a small percentage of girls who, you know, come sure. together over that. But we all know, from my experience, there's always like a friend in there who genuinely is there because she's a good friend of somebody else. It's not that she's one of the prettier girls. Maybe, you know, maybe she's the nicer one.
Yeah.
Whatever. I could see like a world where that girl somehow thought she got lumped into the other group.
she got the friendly fire of attractive glances coming her way.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, men, because of all the privilege they have, they can just lie to make things up. Like, oh yeah, I was the ex-UFC fighter. I would have joined the military.
Yeah.
Like they can lie to make things up. You know, I can't be like, yeah, you know, I used to be a model for Calvin Klein. People would know that. That's a lie right there.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, I have certainly met those people before, and I'm always like, why are you so confident? What's going on? So either they just had really, really good, which in my words is also really, really bad, supportive parents, or they used to be attractive that it changes. But it changes your self-perception. It changes your body language, and other people pick up on that. And that's something I've noticed as well, is that other people will respond a lot to the way that you handle yourself and the way that you view yourself and project yourself to them, and they can pick up on that. And I think a lot of people pick up on the kind of self-confidence and, for better or worse, market those people as better, more hireable, more deserving of a raise, whatever it is. I mean, the fact that you are confident does not in any way mean you're going to do better at a job. Trust me, I think the best people at most given jobs are the people who are so goddamn insecure that even though they've been doing it for 30 years, they're still up the night before double checking their work to make sure it's going to work, right? Like, I don't necessarily think undue confidence is a good thing, but it is a mental trick in terms of finding out how to get selected.
You do find a lot of people who have that Dunning-Kruger effect at every job, and a person who just think that's just because it is their profession, they're somehow better at it or meant for it. Like, and, yeah. and from blue collar job, from every shitty job, I've met a guy like that.
Yeah. And it's this weird thing where if you are doing it, in reality, if you are projecting confidence you don't have, you're probably going to make a lot of undue mistakes. You're probably going to let a lot of people down who think you are better than you are. You are probably going to be constantly frustrated at yourself if you actually think you are that good and then the results come back. So in a way, it's
all you blame other people. Those people always blame other people and they always get promoted pretty quick because they have confidence.
Well, in a way, it's all negative in terms of the effects, but the trick it plays on our psyche is to make us think it's a positive thing. And so, like, not only are attractive people getting the benefit of being attractive, but they're getting the benefit of what being attractive for a lifetime does to you in terms of your personality and your idiosyncratic tendencies and whatnot. And it's like a little double bump. And for those of us who don't have the super attractive genes, well, we can just kind of hop on with the super confidence, I guess. Though my idea is, like, I get it for gaming the system. You want the job, you're going to pretend to be confident, blah, 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 blah. I still think it's good to not have undue confidence. I still think the undue confidence is a problem in and of itself.
That's why I think you got to, if you're like confident because you know you're funny, I think like that's like a workaround. Like, listen, because you can always make fun of yourself. You know, I'm confident because I know that no matter what happens, my mouth can cash any checks that my ass writes.
But then that would be confident for a reason. You're confident because you, like, listen, if Usain Bolt shows up to the 100-meter relay, he should be confident. He's got a reason to be confident, right? But if I show up to the 100-meter relay with Usain Bolt's confidence, something is wrong.
Go to an open mic and you will see the comedian version of that.
That's
true. Of a guy who believes, like, for some reason, night after night, thinks like, hey, I'm funny enough. I got this. And night after night, that guy lies to himself.
Now, obviously, I have problems with the whole power posing and stuff, so I would like to see some follow-up studies that kind of address some stuff.
Yeah,
I know
you do, because you fucking fired me from a podcast for putting my dick out. Yeah, no shit, Bobby.
I'd like to see more controls. I'd also like to do some real tests of like how hot people and not hot people are compared differently. And I think we could do it nowadays with technology, with Zoom calls. So like you do a bunch of Zoom interviews with somebody and then you do the exact same thing and you put like a filter, like a mask on where now all of a sudden the ugly people are gorgeous and the gorgeous people are ugly and you see if they get reviewed differently based on what mask is being applied to them. Like I think we have the technology to really do it. I wanted them to go one step further. I want them to do one where you get a bunch of like super uggo dudes and then you try and get convince them that they have the confidence of an attractive person and then send them out to power pose and see if it gets them laid. And that is where science comes full circle to once again being the pickup artist.
Where we actually have like deep fake technology, right?
Yeah.
So basically we just get a couple of Brad Pitts to put on like the Steve Buscemi or John Goodman filter.
Yeah.
And give the interview. They'll have the exact same confidence.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you have the attractive people with the confidence, but they look bad, and you have the non-attractive people without the confidence, but they look gorgeous, and you see how the ratings go.
By the way, I want to take a step back when you were saying like parents who love their kids too much can also have this effect. Like, and I'm like, I'm picturing, you know, like I have a niece, and my niece is 13 years old. She hates her body. She hates her weight. She's always like beating herself up. And like, she's like, my niece is always like, I'm fat. No, you know, I'm disgusting and everything. And I'm always like that loving parent or loving uncle. Like, hey, no, you're not. Hey, first off, you're a strong kid. You're from my genes. We got big bones. But not only that, we're really athletic, blah, blah, blah. Whereas I'm picturing Bobby's thing is, yeah, you're fat. Nobody's going to take you to prom. Get in her beauty.
Pick up the math book, sweetheart.
Listen, let's face it. This is not a place of confidence for you. All right? Like all like when I'm talking to you, I'm imagining a better looking niece that somehow exists in the world just so I can stomach this conversation, girl. All right?
Dear, I would make a great uncle. Oh, thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 576, where you learned all about the genes of the damned and how important attractiveness is at work. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 577.
Oh, you know, Asian stereotype. We cannot drive because we are bare on motorcycle.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.